Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
1 week from Friday, we are back live at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. My happy place for our next live show. Last time we had our best crowd ever, biggest crowd. Do not miss it. Holiday weekend. No excuse. So join us Friday, October 11th. Andy Blum is president of Andy Blum Communications. He served as communications director for Representative Michael Turner of Ohio. You can follow him on social media at AndyBlum.com. He's also a Minnesotan, so he knows Tim Walz, and he writes for BroadandLiberty.com, where he has a piece coming out on the debate. Andy, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Hey, Rich. Thanks. Great to be with you and to my Jewish friend, Shana Tova.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Because Rosh Hashanah begins now.
Tonight, sundown.
Right, sundown. So, okay. All right. So we gotta get you off the show quickly, obviously.
I got time for you, Richard.
You got time. All right, good. Let's, I don't know, is your piece live yet on broadandliberty.com?
It is live on broadandliberty.com now, and it's called Vance Shows Trump How It's Done.
Okay. Vance Shows Trump How It's Done. My takeaway from this was that J.D. Vance had a spectacular night. I thought Tim Walz had a very, very bad night. And I think it's very obvious that the Harris campaign made a huge mistake picking this guy. He's just
no
terrible.
No question.
Yeah.
No question. They should have picked Shapiro, and they didn't because right now he's busy celebrating the Jewish New Year.
Yeah.
And that's why they didn't pick him. I've listened to you a little bit throughout the day. Yes, Walz had a really bad night. It's really hard to picture a guy, Vice President Knucklehead, in the White House. It really is difficult. But here's what he didn't do. You really can't take any gaffe that he made from last night and put it in a television commercial. Maybe I'm a knucklehead, but it's really hard to take anything that he said and use it against him. It just, the vibe doesn't work. And this is a campaign run on two things, vibes and Donald Trump is a bad guy. And I thought Vance was excellent, but I thought he also left opportunities on the table. And one of them was the Tiananmen Square moment where he said he was a knucklehead. And Walz doubled down on the lie when he explained himself. He said, I got there that summer and misspoke on this, so I will just, well, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong in China during the democracy protest went in, and from that I learned a lot what needed to be in governance. That's his quote. Well, that's another lie. Walz was not in Asia during the democracy protest in China. He was in Nebraska. There's a contemporary newspaper from that time that shows that Walz was in Nebraska. So he wasn't in Hong Kong. He wasn't in Asia. He was in Nebraska. And if there was one time in the night, and I think it was good that Vance didn't attack Walz, that he spent his time focused on what's wrong with Kamala Harris. But if there's one time that Vance should have responded directly to Walz, it was when he doubled down on the Tiananmen Square lie. And he should have responded about, you know, you've misspoken about your rank, about carrying weapons of war when you were never in an active combat zone, about IVF, about your DUI, and I'm probably forgetting a few. You blamed, when you sat down with Dana Bash and spoke your 700 words during that interview, you blamed it all on bad grammar. Well, given the fact that you're running this campaign on blaming Donald Trump for everything and his character, you really have a problem speaking truthfully, don't you, Tim? It might have been the one time last night that Vance should have attacked him.
Yeah, well, let's think about that. I mean, from a strategic perspective, do you think the strategy was let's not attack Tim Walz too much because we want to make the focus on Kamala Harris and not on him?
Yeah, I do. And I think that was a good strategy. And I also think that Vance wanted to come out looking like a good guy and not look like the fire-breathing, horned dragon that the media has made him out to be.
Yeah.
And I think that was successful. But I think that was the one time where he really should have said, you know, Tim, you misspeak an awful lot for a plain-spoken Midwestern dad. You really have a problem with the truth. I think that's the one time he could have done it.
That's fair. That's a fair point. I see exactly your point on that. And I think with Tim Walz saying, you know, I'm a knucklehead sometimes, I don't know. I mean, you think that just came out? Was that spontaneous, or was that something that they rehearsed?
No, I think that just came out, and I think that's a huge mistake. I mean, really, can you see Vice President Knucklehead?
No.
What is he? One of the Three Stooges? Why, you knucklehead? I mean, seriously, who says that? You want to be vice president, and you say, I'm a knucklehead? It's okay to say, I made a mistake. I misspoke. I was wrong. I changed my mind. But hi, I'm Vice President Knucklehead. Should they win, you should forever hang that around his neck. I'm Vice President Knucklehead. Let's pray he doesn't become Vice President Knucklehead, and he's only Governor Knucklehead. He's my governor, and he is a knucklehead. He also lied about something else that was really important. You know, they spent the moderators love to rehash this abortion issue over and over and over again. Either Tim Walz lied, or he has no idea what he signed into law. Because on January 31, 2023, he signed into law something called the PRO Act. It stands for Protect Reproductive Options. He signed it into Minnesota state law. It codifies the right to abortion and other reproductive rights that are really pretty horrific. It guarantees that a, quote, pregnant individual has the right to decide whether to continue or terminate a pregnancy at any state without gestation, without limits during the entire 9 months. And it goes a step further. The PRO Act eliminates a law that was signed by a previous Democrat governor called the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. That law obligated doctors to take measures to save a fetus in case of a botched abortion. Walz went a step further by eliminating reporting requirements so nobody will know how often that happens in the future. Depending on which source I use, it either has happened 5 times or 8 times thus far during the Walz administration in the state of Minnesota. So it's really pretty horrific, and Walz denied it. And I haven't seen one fact checker yet say that Walz lied or was wrong or doesn't know what he signed into law. And it's a pretty horrific law.
Yeah, and I think actually the number's 8, if I'm not mistaken.
I've seen it reported as 5 and 8, and I don't know which number's true because I've seen credible sources reported as both.
So and this is it's a good point too, because I think that it's such an extreme position that it makes people really uncomfortable with how far the Democrats are on this issue. And there's a lot of people looking for a middle ground here on this issue, obviously, in this election cycle. And I mean, Trump is trying to capture that by saying no federal ban on abortion, we're leaving it to the states. And when you think about how extreme a policy like this is, I think it makes people cringe, except for the far left lunatics who, you know, who support this kind of stuff. And it also really undercuts the whole goofy Midwestern dad thing, that he's the kind of guy that would sign a law like this into law in the first place, right?
I think that's absolutely correct. And I understand both sides of this issue, both the pro-choice and the pro-life argument. What I don't understand is how anybody could be for late-term abortion. I just cannot fathom that at all. That's beyond my comprehension. And that's what this law does. It legalizes late-term abortion in all cases. Not the case to save the mother's life, not rape or incest, which, again, I don't understand late-term abortion in the case of race, in the case of rape or incest. If you want to get rid of the baby because of rape or incest, and you tell me you want to do it in 15 weeks, I understand that point of view. Whether you agree or disagree, I understand that point of view. What I don't understand is waiting till the 8th or 9th month and going, you know, I've changed my mind.
Yeah.
That I don't understand. I just cannot fathom that at all.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right on that point. And I think people are with you on that. And this dodge by him on this is it's completely unacceptable. What about the part last night where he said that he's friends with shooters? I mean, I know that was a gaffe, but do you think that's going to come back and haunt him?
You know, that's one of the other points that I mentioned in my column that's on broadandliberty.com. I think it's just a misspeak, just a fumfit, but it is really cringeworthy. And I don't know that it's that big of a deal, but he's not an articulate, well-spoken guy. He is a goofy guy, and he really is the weird guy. Let me put it this way. Who came off as weird last night?
Yeah.
Tim Walz came off as weird. Vance came off as articulate, thoughtful, and well-spoken, and certainly not weird. And Tim Walz came off as weird. So, you know, that's really the problem. There was a whole bunch of things. What Walz's strategy was really, really much like what Kamala Harris did. It was you saw it in the first question. The first question was, would you support a preemptive attack on Iran by Israel? And immediately what Walz did was answer with his bio and then never answer the question. Compare that to what Vance did. And his answer was that, I'm trying to remember his exact words, but the bottom line was he said that we ought to support our allies and Israel needs to do what it needs to do. And he was okay with it. And my thought to that as I watched it was, which one of these guys do you think the mullahs and ayatollah are more afraid of right now? Who do you think they're rooting for?
Yeah.
They want to see Vance and Donald Trump in the White House. They want to see Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in the White House. They're not afraid of Harris and Walz. They're afraid of Trump and Vance.
Andy Blum is with me right now. We're talking about the debate last night. Andy Blum is a communications expert. His latest column at broadandliberty.com about the debate. The other thing, too, is, I mean, and look, and you know, you've advised politicians over the years, body language, facial expressions, these things matter. There are so many memes that have been made of Tim Walz's deer in headlights look last night. And you know, I mean, I obviously these things matter, right? I mean, you remember the old saying about when you listen to the Kennedy versus Nixon debate on the radio versus watching it on TV, you had a different thought on who won. These things matter. And J.D. Vance looked really good last night. Everything about him came across really likable. And then Walz with that friggin' deer in headlights look multiple times and those bug eyes. And that's become a meme now. So, again, I think it plays into that goofball thing with him. And I don't think people are looking for a goofball right now.
Yeah, I can't imagine in these serious times where the world is literally on fire that you want Vice President Knucklehead. I just can't imagine.
Yeah.
But I think in this case, you know, if you listen to the Trump-Harris debate, you probably came away with a better impression than if you watched it where Trump wouldn't look at her. But in this case, if you weren't watching it, if you had the sound down, and by the way, as I'm writing the column, I was listening to it again with my back to the television and wasn't watching it. If you were just listening to it and heard him say, I'm a knucklehead, and heard him say, I made friends with shooters, you also thought he lost the debate. He didn't win whether you were looking at him or whether you were listening to him. He lost on every account. I'll tell you what, Rich, I gave him a C instead of a D, and I was going to give him a D. But I'll tell you the moment that I upped him from a D to a C, and I'll tell you the worst moment for Vance last night, and it was the 2020 election moment where Walz came back and said, that's a damning statement. And I really think that Vance had him on the ropes when he started talking about censorship and the threat that represents democracy. But there was another opportunity there. You know what really is a threat to our democracy? What Harris and Biden are thinking about doing or trying to do with the Supreme Court right now. They're literally tearing up the Constitution and removing the checks and balances on our system. That is the biggest threat to democracy in 250 years, much bigger threat than January 6th was.
Yeah, I think that's a excellent observation. What about in terms of the handling of Iran last night by J.D. Vance? I thought that was a good moment for him when he talked about, you know, here you have Walz up there saying that Donald Trump's an agent of chaos. And J.D. Vance comes out and says, actually, you know, we had stability in the world. And I think people think back and think there was stability in the world.
Well, there was peace, prosperity. The country was better off. And where I thought Vance just hit a grand slam home run, where he nailed it, was with his closing statement.
Yes.
His closing statement
yes.
was just a smash. Really, really good. I really hope Donald Trump was watching that debate and really looking and listening to what Vance did, because he effectively took apart the Harris campaign, and he effectively prosecuted Harris, and he effectively sold Trump's policies much better than Trump has done. Trump needs to stop making personal attacks and just make the case that 4 years ago, before COVID came, we had peace, we had prosperity, we didn't have inflation, the world wasn't on fire, and the media made it a point to make him into this villain when he isn't a villain. He may be an a-hole sometimes, but he also was an effective leader as president. And there's nothing better during these 4 years. Nothing. Inflation is worse. Crime is worse. The border is worse. Wars across the world are worse. Everything is worse. So when she says we're not going back, yes, we are. We're going back to peace, prosperity, lower prices, American energy independence. That's what we're going back to. We're not continuing with another 4 years of the chaos that we've had under the Biden-Harris administration. And she wants to double down on the bad policies. And when her approval ratings start to drop, all those policies from 2019 that right now she's against, she'll suddenly be for again, because that's what she knows. That's what she believes in. We do want to go back to no inflation. We do want to go back to a sealed border. We do want to go back to a world where Vladimir Putin is afraid to leave his borders because he doesn't know what Donald Trump will do. That's what we need to have once again. And we really can have it, but not if Kamala Harris is president and Governor Knucklehead becomes vice president.
Governor Knucklehead, I love it. Andy Bloom, thanks, my friend. I appreciate it. Check out his column at broadandliberty.com and follow him on X at andybloom.com. I'm sure we'll talk soon again, my friend. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Richie. Shana tova.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, as we continue along here in our fourth and final hour, I want to get into the dock worker strike. There's also some breaking news in New Jersey. A story just came out that New Jersey can't take care of its own veterans. And the federal government now is going after New Jersey over its handling of all those veterans who died in the state-run nursing facilities during COVID-19. So that just came out, that the U.S. Justice Department filed a civil complaint against New Jersey today. This story is published about 5 o'clock, so a little bit over an hour and a half ago. Over the state's failed response to the COVID-19 pandemic at its veterans' homes, where hundreds died in the wake of lax infection controls and allegations of substandard care of residents. I will get into this with you as well as we continue along with the show. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm John.
It is 6:30-ish, 6:29, whatever, right around that time. And there's breaking news in New Jersey around veterans' homes. I'm going to get into that in just a second. But I just want to, I always like to check on the polls. And Real Clear Politics is really good about this in showing us this day in history. So you get a little bit of a sense of where things were. Now, if you look at, I'm just going to do Pennsylvania because, you know, I think national polls are BS. So basically right now, Trafalgar, which is the one that I think is the most accurate, has Trump up 3 in Pennsylvania. That poll was conducted September 26th through the 29th. Emerson has them at a tie. Fox News poll has them at a tie. Atlas Intel has Trump up 3. Cook has Harris up by 1. Bloomberg has Harris up by 5, which I think is a total outlier. Rasmussen, tie. Fabrizio, which is Tony Fabrizio, has Harris up by 3. He's very accurate usually. Susquehanna has a tie. All right. This day in history, though, October 2nd, 2020, Joe Biden was up 6.8% in Pennsylvania. Now, he did not win Pennsylvania by 6.8%. He won Pennsylvania by less than 1%. October 2nd, 2016, Hillary Clinton was up 2.4%. Hillary Clinton did not win Pennsylvania. So, if we are looking at polls historically, that means that Donald Trump is performing better based on 2016 and 2020. he's outperforming the polls. And that for whatever reason, the polls can't reflect that. Whatever the reason is. Shy Trump voters, overly enthusiastic Democrats, Republicans who don't want to answer the phone. Who the hell knows? I don't know. Nobody knows. It's the variable that we don't know. Pollsters keep saying they've changed their methodology, but they got it wrong in 2020 as well. Because Joe Biden did not win by the margins. Well, some people don't think Joe Biden won, but I mean, he certainly did not win by the margins that the polls said he would. So if you base it on that, if you got Trump up 3 by Trafalgar, that means Trump could win Pennsylvania by even more. Or maybe just win Pennsylvania by 3. Or maybe eke it out by a little bit. But it's bad news for Harris, because when Hillary Clinton had a 2.4% lead on this day in history in Pennsylvania, she would lose. She went on to lose the state, because that 2.4% lead was a fugazi. And I think that that is very telling for these polls. And it goes with the story that I've been sharing with you throughout the show today. In Deep Blue Philly, working class voters are shifting towards Republicans. Democrats have lost the most ground in neighborhoods where poverty rates are highest. It could hurt Kamala Harris in November. But let me just switch gears real quick. The other side of the river, I think this matters because it goes back to the incompetence of government during COVID and the dictatorship of his royal ruggedness, King Philip the Unaccountable, and what he imposed upon the peasants of New Jersey, and how he ordered the deaths of veterans in nursing homes by his actions, and also non-veterans in nursing homes as well. So in a widely expected move, the United States Justice Department filed a civil complaint against New Jersey today over the state's failed response to the COVID-19 pandemic at its veterans' homes, where hundreds died in the wake of lax infection controls and allegations of substandard care of residents. At the same time, New Jersey officials entered into a consent decree that called for a federal monitor to oversee two of the three long-term care facilities operated by the state. U.S. Attorney Philip Selinger said in a statement, "Our veterans who have sacrificed so much should never have been subject to deficient care." This consent decree provides a detailed roadmap and expert oversight to ensure they are protected so that they and their families can rely on the veterans' homes. "We look forward to working with the state and the independent monitor to implement this decree and ensure that every resident of the veterans' homes lives with the safety and dignity that they so richly deserve." Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division said the consent decree, which still must be approved by the court, requires the state to deliver proper care and have the oversight in place to provide families with confidence. This is from NJ.com, Matt Arco writing this piece. "The Justice Department will work diligently with the state to ensure the reforms are properly implemented." Now, these Democrats who killed all these people in nursing homes, whether it's the Love Gov, Andrew Cuomo, the nursing home killer, Phil Murphy, Tom Wolf, Rachel Admiral, you always have to say that by law, Admiral Rachel Levine, Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, they're all the same. They're all the same people. They're all the same. One of the same. Oh, speaking of wackos and whack jobs, Joy Reid toning down the rhetoric real nice in the post-shooting assassination attempt era that we're in right now. Remember I told you how both sides don't have to turn down the rhetoric? It's not both sides, it's one side. Well, here to prove that is Joy Reid from the imbecile from MSNBC, who after the debate last night basically said, and this is Cube Cut 17, Matt, "Democrats want to see someone get up there and cut 17.
And so I think that the people who want the fist fight are the base of the Democratic Party. Mm. Democrats want to see someone get up there and give a knuckle sandwich to Donald Trump. That's what they want.
Give a knuckle sandwich. That's what they want. Oh, speaking of this, a whack job was charged after driving past security checkpoint at a Trump rally, claimed to have a bomb. Man allegedly held up a bottle to police and stated that it was a C4 explosive and that it was the real deal. And he pled not guilty to multiple charges Monday. This was in Michigan. Stephen William Nuata He held up a bottle of police and stated that it was a C4 explosive and that it was the real deal. After being told to stop by officers, he allegedly sped off before stopping and throwing bags of fertilizer on the ground. When he finally stopped, he removed bags of fertilizer from his vehicle and threw them on the ground to make it appear that they were explosives while disobeying the officer's commands. I don't know why they didn't shoot his tires or shoot him, but nevertheless, anyway, there was no active bomb in his vehicle. And his virtual court appearance from a jail scene was a bizarre scene as the man took his shirt off at one point, made profane hand gestures. He was charged with one felony count each of a false report, threat of terrorism, possession of bombs with unlawful intent, third degree fleeing a police officer, and resulting, resisting, or obstructing a police officer. Got $1 million bond. And he said to the judge, well, Your Honor, given my situation, I think I'm better off just staying in here. Very cruel world out there. Probably a lot better off here. Now, I know what you're thinking. This man sounds crazy, and he does. Is he Olivia Newsy crazy? No, but still pretty crazy. I still think she takes the cake. Sorry. My own entertainment. For my own entertainment. The big debate tomorrow night for the United States Senate seat in Pennsylvania between McCormick and the lesser Casey. I'm sure there's going to be a lot said about that as we gear up for that debate. Dave McCormick released a new ad that took aim at the lesser Casey for his support of the Iranian regime. And it's timely, too, given that Iran struck Israel yesterday. This is from Senator Casey's, this is from Dave McCormick's campaign. Cut 21.
There is a ballistic missile attack unfolding as we speak against Israel. It has been launched from Iranian territory.
The agreement enhances our national security. This agreement enhances that deterrent effect and also enhances the security of Israel and the region. The region, including Israel, will be more secure with the agreement as opposed to without it.
You think it should be scrapped?
I think you could have voted against the Iran agreement originally and still be in favor of keeping it in place.
On the note of Iran, that's a good ad. On the note of Iran, I thought J.D. Vance, as I mentioned with Andy Bloom, I thought he had a good answer on Iran and talking about just the stability of the world. And I think, again, this is one of the things about Donald Trump that people like, particularly young people, though, which is this idea of not having new wars, not having any new wars and not, you know, worrying about World War III starting every single day. And, you know, I think it matters to people. I really do. So let's cue up Cut 24. I think it matters. I think it's one of the things that people gravitate towards about Trump. 4 years, we had no wars, no new wars, and we didn't. And the war on terror was winding down, and Russia did not invade Ukraine, and Iran stayed in its lane. Cut 24.
Now, to answer this particular question, we have to remember that as much as Governor Waltz just accused Donald Trump of being an agent of chaos, Donald Trump actually delivered stability in the world, and he did it by establishing effective deterrence. People were afraid of stepping out of line. Iran, which launched this attack, has received over $100 billion in unfrozen assets thanks to the Kamala Harris administration. What do they use that money for? They use it to buy weapons that they're now launching against our allies, and God forbid, potentially launching against the United States as well. Donald Trump recognized that for people to fear the United States, you needed peace through strength. They needed to recognize that if they got out of line, the United States global leadership would put stability and peace back in the world. Now, you asked about a preemptive strike, Margaret, and I want to answer the question. Look, it is up to Israel what they think they need to do to keep their country safe, and we should support our allies wherever they are when they're fighting the bad guys. I think that's the right approach to take with the Israel question.
From the Washington Post asking the uncommitted voters in swing states, Heather, 39 years old in Pennsylvania, has a preference for Trump. This is what she said last night. She said, I found the debate to be very amicable. They both seem to care about what the American people, both seem to care about the American people and were agreeable to what each other had to say. I've never seen a debate like tonight's. But she thought Vance performed better. Kimberly, 35, of Michigan, has a preference for Harris, but said Vance is very well spoken and sounds like he is more sound minded than Trump. Connie, 56 years old, of Pennsylvania, not our Connie who comes to the Grand Hotel, a different Connie, said Vance performed better. She has a preference for Trump. She said, I think he was addressing the future and Waltz played more to the past. Vance presented plans on most issues. Another voter, Melissa from Arizona, said Vance was very informed, direct, respectful, personal, and outcome-driven. I was quite impressed with his performance. That's what Melissa of Arizona said. She has a preference for Trump, and she thought Vance performed better as well. Now, I think there's no doubt about it that he did. I think that it's very obvious that he did, and I think that if you... I don't know if you were to look at that debate last night and think to yourself that Tim Waltz won, all you got to do is think about that awful gaffe about him being friends with school shooters, because it's bad. It's a bad thing. And it shows you just what a doofus the guy really is. And I know people have gaffes, but this is a big gaffe to make. Cut number two.
Senator, thank you. Governor, you previously opposed an assault weapons ban, but it's only later in your political career did you change your position. Why?
Yeah, I sat in that office with those Sandy Hook parents. I've become friends with school shooters. I've seen it.
Senator, thank you. Governor,
brutal,
you previously...
Brutal, brutal. And then he was asked about it later on, you know, and you think he would have had an opportunity to correct himself on that and say, I was obviously trying to say I spoke with the... I become friends with the parents. It was a terrible thing to say, and I'm sorry about that. He was asked about that, but he was too busy staring at pizza. They went out for pizza after the debate, and the tubby guy couldn't stop staring at the pizza that was there. Right? I mean, he was, like, salivating over this.
Pizza did look good, in fairness.
Yeah, I know it did. It was what was the name of the place? Pontillo's in New York City? I don't know if I've ever been
Justino's, I believe.
What is it called? Justino's,
yeah.
I don't know if I've ever been there or not, but, I mean, that guy was staring at it like he hadn't eaten in 5 minutes. Tubby Midwestern doofus dad. So they asked him about it, you know, like, would you want to, but he couldn't keep his eyes off the pizza, so he just basically ignored the question. Take a listen.
What do you think your strongest moment was tonight?
I think it was a good debate. We both got to see a contrast. And I think the ending sums it up. The democracy issue is important.
Governor, you said you've become friends with school shooters during the debate. Can you clarify what you meant on that?
Can you clarify what you meant when you said you'd be friends with school shooters?
No, I can't, because I'm too busy staring at the pizza and salivating over it. Salivating. Drooling like a dog. This is why Twitter needs an unlike button. I mean, I'm not exaggerating, right? You've got the video there.
Oh, yeah. He wants that pizza. He doesn't have time to answer questions from the press or relive his most embarrassing moments from the debate.
Yeah, yeah, he doesn't have time
pizza.
To clean that up. He's ready to clean the plate, lick it clean of the pizza grease that drips down. The Midwestern doofus knucklehead. Casey V. Snyder just sent me a tweet. I wish there was a dislike button on Twitter, but Casey said, COVID PTSD in South Jersey, and just sent a picture of the toilet paper and the paper towel roll shelves completely, completely gone. So that's, I don't know what store in South Jersey, but just sent that a few moments ago at 6:35 p.m. So there you go. We got the panic setting in already as the labor strike continues. And you can thank Joe Biden for this strike, because he said he was always going to empower the big unions, and he certainly did. And now they literally have the ability to hold our economy and potentially destroy it. Now, look, I think it's going to benefit Trump in the end, but, you know, I'm just saying. So I'm just saying, I think it's you can blame this on Biden, no doubt about it. All right, more to come in our fourth and final hours. We continue along with the show here. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Now the only question is, do I leave here and go get paper towels? What do you think, Justin?
I would say I would probably err on the side of caution and say yes, I might.
Yeah.
But first, as soon as we're done here, I'm getting the greasiest pizza on God's green earth.
Are you craving pizza now after Walter's drooling over it? Yeah. Yeah. I kind of am too, actually. Sounds good. All right, you can pot it down now. Thank you, Justin. Yeah, I'm also starving. I have to go get my son to practice, but I do have time to sneak in and get some paper towels, so maybe I'll do that on the way. Maybe I'll do that. Yeah, and did you see Chris Eppolito sent this a couple hours ago? He said, port strike update. Currently, the Mount Laurel Costco wiped out of paper towels, but lots and lots of, what the hell are those? Donuts? Oh, no, brioche buns. They're brioche buns. Oh, my gosh. Brioche buns. See that, DeSantis?
Thank goodness.
You don't have anything to worry about.
I've not been impacted just yet.
You'll get your brioche buns and you'll like it. You know, he likes those brioche buns, Justin.
Oh, I've heard the legend and I've seen it mentioned several times in the YouTube chat.
It's just unbelievable. Bologna sandwiches, brioche buns, and Coca-Cola. Man's a gourmand. He's a foodie.
A Harvard-educated gourmand.
He is a foodie. Yeah, I think I'll race over and get some paper towel and some coffee, because that's what I'm like the greater Chris who said this yesterday too. So I mean, I could deal with that with no paper towels and no toilet paper, but I have to have coffee. So
it's disgusting. Yeah.
That's a deal breaker right there.
Ugh.
Couldn't survive it. Fisher Pine said at Costco this morning, and every cart had several paper towels and TP on them. It's, you know, we all, it's, I mean, Casey Snyder was right in his tweet before. It's COVID PTSD. That's what it is. We're all dealing with that. We all remember what that was like back then. And I remember because my wife was pregnant and we were, you know, Reagan was born in April, but I'm in there in March thinking I may not be able to leave the house for the next few months. I didn't know what the hell was coming at the time. So I thought, all right, we may have a baby. I may not be able to come back to the store. I may not want to come back to the store when our baby's born. So I was, you know, loading up. I remember at one point I had so much stuff in two carts. This woman looked at me. I said, my wife's pregnant? And she thought I was lying. And I was like, no, really, she is. I swear. And I just don't want to come back to the store for a while. So, yeah, I think it's that. It's probably that. Or also it's that we know the prices are going to go through the roof on this stuff. And you want to try to buy low, right? Buy it low. I know Justin's looking at me. I'm going to make it. Don't worry. I'm hard out.
No, I was just, no,
I got you. No, I got
fine,
you. I appreciate the reminder.
I was looking at something to send to DeSantis.
I appreciate the reminder. Don't worry. Hard out. I got it. All right. So the great one, Mark Levin, is up next. Grand Hotel, Friday, October 11th. I promise you the bar will be fully stocked on Friday, October 11th for our next live show. So join us for that. It's going to be a great time. And it's a long weekend, so, you know, you can make a weekend out of it. Or just come down for the show, whatever you want to do. But join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. The live shows are great. And so please do that Friday, October 11th. Have a great rest of your night. Keep the conversation going on X, at Rich Zeoli. Instagram, at Zeoli Show. Thank you.